forms at Holden are not intended to be lectures. The differentiation is that the person leading the forum maybe takes 5 or 10 minutes to lay out a few things, and then the way the forum goes or the evening goes depends upon your participation. The subject for tonight is alternative Christmas celebrations. Someone asked me today, alternative to what? I thought maybe that was obvious, but maybe I should lay out what I mean by an alternative Christmas celebration. I was reading the other day something that just substantiated the fact that I think the way what we have done to Christmas is something that the church alone can probably reclaim, or at least church people. I've discovered that during the Christmas season, the businessmen sell $10 billion worth of gifts and gadgets. And television advertising is especially aimed at children. 8 and 9 year olds, researchers have found, do not understand the difference even between a commercial and between the actual program. They simply sit there and enjoy all of it. Just let me read you one paragraph from a book called, put out by Alternatives, called Alternative Christmas. Research has shown that children the ages of 8 and 9 have little awareness of what commercials are for, do not understand that advertisers seek profit, and have great difficulty even distinguishing between a program and a commercial. Toward this age group, commercial interests hurl incredible mind-numbing campaigns. Over $600 million a year is spent on television advertising aimed at children. According to some research, the average American child sees an unbelievable 25,000 commercials every year. At Christmas time, the whole approach is geared up even more intensely, especially by the $5 billion a year toy industry. In major market areas, children will be hit with up to 80 television spot ads for a single toy the last 2 weeks of Christmas. All right, when we used to live in Washington, D.C., and our children were small, I can remember a certain toy, I think it was a doll that wet its pants or something. You saw this, and if this is right, 80 times in 2 weeks that my children watched television, it was very obvious that my daughters felt very deprived if they didn't get this specific toy. Alternative Christmases, I think, have something to do, first of all, with creative deprivation of our children. That's a word that I like. It was coined by Coleman McCarthy, who's a writer for the Washington Post. He says that one of the finest things parents could do for their children at Christmas time is to creatively deprive them. If your Christmases are anything like mine, you wonder how many Christmas cards you have to send out this year. Who can you cut from the list? Not that you want to cut them, but you just don't have time to write all the cards. How much are the cards going to cost? Can I get the bazaar items made? How many cookies and rosettes and lefse can I make and stash away? The children have to have Christmas costumes made. There are several office parties that we have to attend. The neighbors want a cocktail party. What can we get for the grandparents? They don't seem to need anything. That kind of thing goes on, I think, in the average American home many times over. And we find that when Christmas finally comes, we're just too exhausted to finally have all the family in for Christmas. Liz Kemmerer was up here last week and we were discussing this, and she said all of a sudden her mother stopped being a grandmother, because last year when none of the kids and the grandchildren could come for Christmas, grandmother no longer had to make all the Christmas cookies and do all the preparation, and she found she really loved it. They went south instead, and so this year she wrote and said, it was such a neat Christmas last year without having to do all that stuff. Would you mind if Dad and I just went south again? And Liz said it was really neat. She just stopped playing this grandmother role of having to have all of these things done. I think we assume that mothers and super moms and super grandmas have to have all this done at Christmas, and I would like to say that there are some alternative ways of celebrating Christmas, both in the frantic amount of time that we put into it that is not necessary or that's exhausting, so that we're crabby and don't enjoy Christmas, and also an alternative to the mind-boggling consumption of material things. I don't want to spend time this evening discussing the whole reason for not being so materially minded, but that $10 billion worth of profit goes into the business community at Christmas over the sale of gifts and gadgets bothers me a great deal. To recapture the theme for Christmas, I would like to propose this evening the word peace, or shalom. The first thing that Jesus heard as a baby when he was born was the angel singing, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace." I think Christmas is a time to remember that Jesus came to be a reconciler, to end hostilities, to break down walls. And when there are racial prejudices and sexual prejudices and cultural prejudices and economic prejudices and all of these things, that's the main thing that Christmas should be about, bringing peace and reconciling people. The fact that Jesus was laid in a feed box when he was born at Christmas, the most simple thing, very symbolic, I think, when you think of it, that here was the bread of the world where people come for nourishment. And in that utter simplicity, if you just think of the events surrounding Christmas, how it was celebrated, there was a lot of worshiping being done. And I think this evening's discussion, maybe to center it, we can put the whole theme of shalom, which is wholeness, completeness. Maybe you've heard us say before that shalom has nothing whatsoever to do with a personal peace between me and Jesus. Shalom is that all-encompassing wholeness. It's a community thing, a social concept, where I have a sense of wholeness with God, with my environment, and with other people. So let's talk about Christmas tonight with a theme of shalom, of bringing peace back into Christmas. If we want to bring the whole idea of shalom back into our Christmas celebrations, and we know that we, in order to be whole people, we have to have shalom with God, shalom with the environment in which we live, and shalom with one another, then how could our Christmas be different than the way it is now? How do you celebrate an alternative Christmas, keeping in mind these three aspects of shalom? How do you celebrate Christmas? Can you give some alternatives, some things that you've done in your family or would like to do that would be more peacemaking, more shalom-inducing at Christmas time? Let's start with the environment. How could you celebrate Christmas to be very concerned about the environment? How would you do things differently? What about them? Do any of you have a live tree at Christmas?
We did, it died.
How do you feel about that? Live versus cut Christmas trees or plastic trees? Metal ones.
Also, it's a matter of economics. They're very expensive to buy.
All right, the reason we don't is that it isn't as convenient. It's more expensive. That again is a priority that you have to set. How important is it to you that you cut a tree instead of trying to plant one? It's an idea. You can adopt a tree. There are groups like the Sierra Club and others where you can send money for trees to be planted at Christmas time. As an alternative to you taking a tree and cutting it down, you can adopt a tree. There are all kinds of addresses and ideas that we can give you. Barb just dropped her ice cream cone down on the people below. Anything else in regard to the environment? Have any of you done anything keeping the environment or creation in mind? You could take the top off, okay? Over here, somebody has...
What is the connection between trees and Christmas?
Okay, what is the connection between trees and... I think Martin Luther was the first one to do that, so as a good Lutheran, I want to make sure I have a Christmas tree.
Okay.
All Right, it, what was it? Does anybody know actually?
It has great symbolism.
Okay, what is the symbolism of the tree?
Well, the evergreen and the continual growth and the idea of being able to decorate it with lights so and the light of the world. There's a lot of symbolism.
Boughs point up. Boy, mine never do. Right, or how you decorate your tree, an alternative to the kinds of decorations and things that you want to put on it. Do any of you do anything in that regard? Kathy?
One thing, one year with my godparents, we took walnuts instead of going out and spending money for ornaments, and try to craft them without breaking them in half and glue them back together with a little piece of ribbon and yarn or string.
Okay, those make good gifts, I would imagine, too. Walnut decorations. Anybody else done anything?
We did that one year, too. We put a message inside for each person. So each walnut was for a person in the room.
Like a fortune cookie.
Almost.
Good idea. What, Heidi? Gretchen. Heidi. Anything else in regard to the way you decorate your house or trim your tree that you'd like to share?
I assume other people do it too. Just, I don't even know what it's called. Making little snowflakes out of cotton thread.
Crochet.
Or making balls of, out of material instead of buying manufactured ones.
Let's start, maybe I haven't stated this very well. What? Is this just a way to save money at Christmas or to be tighter? What are we talking about when we say alternative Christmas to material things? Greg?
I think one thing, like on my Christmas tree, it's some of the things that I avoid putting on the Christmas tree that also says something about Christmas. You know, I don't put Santa Clauses on and reindeer and things like this, but I'll generally have just, the lights and a few smaller decorations, maybe a star on top to represent the Star of Bethlehem and snowflakes and bells and things in keeping with more of a Christian tradition rather than the material kind of things that have developed around Christmas and some of the other myths and legends that are also around Christmas. So I think it's some of the things that you avoid putting on a tree or putting around the house that also have a lot to say.
Okay.
Christmas cards.
Excuse me, cards, what?
Christmas cards.
To hang
cards on the tree.
To hang them on the tree. John?
I think one of the things is most of us do need symbols so that it is pictured in our mind and we have a way to express it. And we also want it to be a celebration, a kind of festival day, so that almost everything that we have in the way of a custom started for some reason and was significant. And one of the things of alternatives is to get back to symbols that are better, not that we eliminate and just save money, but that we have better ones. I know the alternative catalog on some other festivals, we are far from the original thing. St. Valentine visited prisons and prisoners. Well, we've almost forgotten the whole thing. Santa Claus or St. Nicholas gets co-opted and becomes too materialistic. So I think one of the things of alternatives is to find either that which for us is more creative, so we enjoy it more and less materialistic, but still has symbols and family relationships or peace building. And what we're saying is not that Christmas is wrong or that even symbols or trees or what have you, but they've lost the intent and we have to revitalize them. And you have to maybe they have to be more individualized instead of buying what someone manufactures.
One of the alternative catalogs, and I'll show you some resources if you're interested in pursuing this, suggest that you take all the money that you spend for Christmas, for cards, postage, decorations, liquor, food, gifts, everything that you do to make Christmas fun and meaningful or whatever it is for you and your friends, add up that figure and then take 25% of that as just kind of an arbitrary amount that you're going to give for some social cause outside of yourself. And I kind of like that idea because there are many things at Christmas time that I don't want to give up. And I still want to share with others, so I'm always caught in the bind of, am I doing this just to save money, or am I doing this, am I using an alternative means of celebrating so that I will have some money left over to do something kind of extra special that I really haven't thought of this year in the way of a social justice or a peace building effort. Any of the rest of you, please, just doesn't have to stick with environmental things right now, but thinking of peace building in relationship to others, to our environment, our relationship with God, how would you like to celebrate Christmas, or what have you done in your families?
Well, I'm talking about college, I suppose you could think about the animals. I think the Norwegian custom of the sheaves of wheat that are put out for the birds and things like that, because remember, that is also ecological, not just a Christmas treat, but to keep them alive during the snow time, and other animals too that have problems foraging for food in the winter time.
Okay, be nice to the birds, give them a gift.
You used a phrase earlier, and I'm not sure my kids understood what that meant, and that was creative deprivation. Can you say more about that?
I think television, kids especially, tells you that in order to be a happy child or a happy adult or a successful person, there are certain things that you have to have. And your friends, especially as you get older, will want, well, I could tell you a story about one of our children. Maybe that would help to explain it. When we lived in West Virginia, we didn't have a lot of money, and Karen wanted a record player. And we decided to get her a record player at Christmas time. But we didn't have a lot of money, so we spent $35 for a record player, and this was a lot out of our budget. And it was one of these little record players where the speakers come out on the lid, you know. I mean, it was a dinky thing, we have to admit. But it was a record player, and Karen was very, very happy with it, and she was given two records for Christmas. And she was very, very happy until she went to a friend's house who had a really neat stereo with two or four speakers that came out of the walls, and a Marantz receiver and a Girard record changer, whatever those words are, I don't even know. After she went back to school or New Year's and heard her records played on this friend's record player, she came home and said, oh, you know, I didn't know what kind of music was in those records. The thing I have is really a stupid, well, she didn't say this because Karen is a very sensitive daughter. She doesn't say things like that. But we knew that she was really hurt and didn't want to say, you are really dumb for picking out this $35 stereo. It couldn't even qualify as a stereo. But Karen was satisfied with it and really enjoyed it, said it was the greatest Christmas present she ever had, until something bigger and better, or someone else said, you really need something bigger and better than that. And I think that's what television tells us a lot of times. And our friends will start to tell us, you really ought to have this kind of clothing, or this fashion, or this kind of gadget for your kitchen, or this car is better, or what you have today isn't nearly as good as what we've made now. And if you're really going to be with it, you got to have something bigger and better. And I think parents are wrong when they think that they have to give their children every new kind of toy and every big thing that comes along. Because pretty soon, when we know that Jesus said he's going to supply everything we need, we think we need something when we really don't. And so adults have to separate out what we need and what we greed for, our needs and our greeds. And I think it's good for everybody, no matter how old you are, to sit down and say, these are the things that I really need to make me happy. And they can be a list, it can be a new record or a bicycle or whatever it is. But then when something bigger and better comes along, then all of a sudden children aren't satisfied. They want the next thing that's a little bit better. And I think to creatively deprive your children means that you say to your kids, it isn't good that we always give you everything that you want or everything that television tells us we need, because we're never going to see things as gifts anymore. I'll tell a story on Mark. I think the worst Christmas I ever had was when he was quite young, and I think he got 10 or 12 presents that Christmas, and I thought that was a lot of presents, and that was from us and relatives. And I remember him opening the last gift and saying, is this all I get? And I was absolutely crushed to think that my child, after opening 10 or 12 presents, thought that that wasn't enough somehow. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say. He was unhappy because someone or something had told him that he really should have a lot more, and I had a terrible day because I felt guilty and I felt angry, and I wondered what we had done wrong where he wasn't satisfied with the things that he did have. Does that explain that word? Can anybody else explain creative deprivation?
I remember kind of something like that as not really as a child, but like when I got into junior high school, I could, putting out our presents underneath the tree on Christmas Eve a couple of days before, and there were, a couple of presents for each person. And then going over to my best friend's house, and the whole living room was filled with Christmas presents. Huge boxes that were, very much time had gone into the wrapping, just the wrapping of them. And, you could tell that, these boxes, it wasn't inexpensive gifts, and I would come home and I felt like that our Christmas was not good, and that, the thing was to have as many Christmas presents as you could have underneath the Christmas tree, so it looked like there was a lot, and if that meant putting your Christmas tree in a corner and stacking them in, whatever. And that was the real good results on me.
First thing someone asked me, what did you get?
What kinds of gifts could you children give that don't require money? What could you do that you think your friends and your family would really enjoy that didn't take a lot of money, but that said, I love you in a way that it doesn't take much to go down to the Kmart or wherever you shop and put down some money to buy something? But what could you do that would say I love you even better than that?
What I do a lot is pick walnuts or filberts, and if you really want to say I love you, you can crack them all and give them to me. Try black walnuts.
Black walnuts. Your hands will show up for months after.
There's a lot of love in those hands.
I didn't have that much money, but I gave things that people had come into my house and said they really lacked. And, I just gave, I wrapped it up and gave it to them for Christmas because it was something that I had used, but that they wanted it, so it was real nice.
Okay, that's a great idea. How many of you do that? Does it seem strange to you, like you're giving them a second-hand gift, or is that... I think it's just our whole understanding with friends and family as to how we feel about this. Thank you for that. That's a great idea.
One year, I can't remember if it was Linda or Barbara, gave me a little book that said things like, I'll do the dishes two times, and mm-hmm. all different little things, and that you can collect them.
Yes,
okay. Well, mine was similar to that. Yeah, and I have a friend who has three youngsters, and on Christmas morning, she would find little notes here and there saying, I will wash the dishes. I will be sure that my bed is made. And it was not only done at Christmas time, it was done at her birthday time also. That was a family tradition as far as those young people were concerned. Or it may, these promises very often were made on a little homemade card. And this same friend, after my father and mother became elderly, always brought them something that she had made. Maybe it was a cookie, maybe a small box of cookies. I know one year she brought my mother a quart jar of home-rendered lard, and things of that kind, which were appreciated as much as very expensive gifts.
Things that you make, bake, sew, write, compose, these are all gifts of love. They take time, but I think in an alternative Christmas celebration, you have to sometimes set aside time to do these things when it is a little bit easier. I don't mean that you can't ever just go down and buy something. I think that's beautiful. If somebody, this summer, someone said, we Christmas shop all year long, and that made sense to me. When they saw in February something that they knew, a book or a record that or whatever it was that they knew so-and-so would like, they picked it up right then. And so when December came, there wasn't this frantic, I've got to go out and do all my Christmas shopping. But a lot of thought was given to it, and I like that idea too very much. Gifts of ballet tickets or symphony tickets, or like my sister and brother-in-law write a note and say, we'd like to take you out to a restaurant meal and to a play or a symphony when the next time you're in Seattle after Christmas. I mean, for John and me, I think that's one of the nicest things they can think of to do, because we don't attend many symphonies up here, although we have good musicians in the village. So things like that are appreciated. Other ideas for alternative ways to celebrate.
I think what you said about buying things or thinking about things all year long is where you hit me in the last few years, because I've had several friends who I've been with who they see something or they hear something the person is saying, they become really sensitive to what needs are. And I was recently in Wenatchee and they had a wonderful sale on socks, work socks. And I'm sure every whole of people know how important good socks are. And on a farm, socks, you just go through one after the other. So I bought about 20 pairs of socks for about $6. And that was one of the greatest things I ever bought. And I don't think my brother-in-law is here, but that's part of his Christmas gift. A lot of socks. I know that I love it. It fit anybody. And, it was a great easy gift. I bought all the socks.
I think, too, in thinking of the environment and the whole using up resources, it's really important when you're going to contemplate a large purchase. It, first of all, is it necessary or did someone else tell me that I really need this thing? Is it made out of resources that are not renewable? Is it just a lot of plastic put together, especially as children's toys and things? Is it going to break right away? If it does break, can it be repaired, or is it all encased in plastic so you have to throw it away? Does it pollute the atmosphere? Does it use a lot of petroleum products? I mean, all of those things, if we're going to be peacemakers and think of shalom in regard to the environment, and I think that also has to do with others, we have to look very carefully at the kind of purchases we make, whether it's Christmas or any time. But I think that's an alternative Christmas celebration idea to keep in mind too. Just be very, very sure it's something you need and that's going to enrich your life in many ways, and not just kind of a toy that's fun to play with and everybody else has it, or I think I need it at this time.
One thing, just trading services of what your skills are versus, I have a friend that was building a house down towards the beach, and a bunch of her friends were carpenters and stuff, and they helped her, you know, build this house, and then later she helped them with some things, and I thought that was nice. Trading.
Kind of bartering, or that's a good idea?
I think one of the most difficult things for me is that we have always lived quite far from the rest of our family, and so I'm always convinced that I'm not making much of a contribution in the family at large. And at holiday time, they consistently send us beautiful gifts.
that are worth quite a bit of money, and it is their way from a distance of expressing their love. And it's always hard for me to accept something that is of a great, much greater material value than I'm able or choose to return. And I always feel like a cheapskate, even though I tell myself what my motives are and I pray about it and everything, it still just bothers me terribly.
We've tried to convince our family that really the thing we would like them to do is for them to give money in our name to Bread for the World or Lutheran World Relief. And this is hard to do. My mom will do that, but then she also wants to add on something else. But I think one of the nicest gifts we ever got one year was a card that said, "We love you and wanted to get you something meaningful to say that we love you, but because you're not hungry or ill-clothed or ill-housed, we're giving money in your name to Lutheran World Relief." And that pleases me very much, and I think that's a... But you can't do that. I mean, I don't feel I can do that to other people unless they're going to do it for me, because I was going around giving money instead of a gift without really checking with those people if that was all right, and I didn't want to check, and yet it seems kind of chintzy that I'm going to let them give me something, and but I'm not going to give them anything, I'm going to give them a gift, so it's kind of ticklish. Other ideas that you can share?
I think one of the things around Christmas is it's not necessarily, it can become a tradition. Now, as your family grows up, things change. But I think doing things together, like going out and, say, selecting a Christmas tree, where it's permissible to cut a tree. Of course, in the outskirts of Seattle, there are a lot of trees you can do this with and build a house. But there was a little girl down the street whose family never did this, and so just running to the store picking one up. But traditionally, this was a big thing in our family. To go out and go through this property and pick a tree, cut it down, and bring it to the house, and everyone decorated to make it with what decorations they had. And it was nice to put when they were in kindergarten, as they grew up. But that became a thing, and it was the idea of everyone doing something, taking time off of their schedule to do this together.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, I want to emphasize that too, Jim.
I don't think there's anything wrong in trees. Now, what would it work? People who raise Christmas trees do.
Be out of business. Yeah, that is a renewable resource, but I think you have to give it some thought too. But the idea of spending more time with family and with one another, the gift of yourself, that's hard to do when we're spread apart from family. And,
last year I was in Minnesota for some friends, and they had been babysitting some Vietnamese people, and they had spent Christmas with them. Or they came over, and they had gotten all of these people, you know, gifts, and they weren't anything, you know, real expensive, but to the Indo-Chinese people, yeah, it was the neatest Christmas for them because their family had been kind of split. And another guy that had no family had came up to this tiny apartment. It was really neat. Just everybody was there together, even though, you know, their extended families were elsewhere.
Those of you that include others in your family, to have an extended family at Christmas, where do you pick these people up? Who do you have?
People who can't pay us back.
People who can't pay you back. Where do you find these people?
Very easily.
Can you give us?
Old bachelors, patients that have no wife or people. Usually they're older.
Mm-hmm. Younger people, my friends, there are couples who are away from home.
College students. It's pretty hard to travel if you're going to a school on the West Coast back to the Midwest or to even down the coast in many cases for the state of the holidays. A lot of students in dormitories are staying for the holidays.
suicide rates, or suicide, not rates, I'm trying to say. The number of suicides goes up dramatically during the holidays, and I think that says something about the importance of including lonely people in Christmas celebrations.
You can find them right in your own church, too. Yeah. Up a line.
One thing that Kay does is to call up friends back on the East Coast and talk with them extensively and really on a personal level and give them a great deal of support and hope.
As their Christmas present.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
I think one thing that I discovered is that in talking about alternative Christmases or alternative celebrations in churches, that the way it's prepared and the way it's shared is very, very important. That I think we're relatively like-minded people. But in many parishes, the reaction to what we would be saying would be negative because, for example, we may have people in the business community or in our parishes whose businesses may suffer because of our lack of buying things. We could go into that, but I think the important thing is to talk about the simplicity and returning to symbols that mean something and to traditions that have great meaning for us. And, one thing that we found began things very nicely for us and helped people to make a first step, which I think is really important, was not exchanging Christmas cards in the church, but having a huge mural kind of thing where people could write a note, a family note or something, to the whole congregation. They made sort of a wall out of that, and it became kind of a big Christmas card for the whole church that everybody could share. And it was very small, but it began the process so that people could begin to think about the possibilities in the future.
Along with that same idea, what we did for the past 6-7 years in the parish of San Francisco, that same kind of card idea, but the money that they would normally spend for each other was contributed to them for a common gift. It doesn't seem like, okay, if you're spending $5 for just to pick a figure, it doesn't seem like much to send that to Lismore Relief or ALC's Hunger Appeal or something. But when you do that as a group, you end up with $200-$400 or more. And it seemed like a significant, very significant gift to people at that point. And we had also somebody design a new card every year. The same card, just a new side for the names or something like that. It became a very important part of it.
Other things that you do in your parishes like this at Christmas?
Well, what we do is invite our neighbors who don't go to church at all. It isn't that they are unsophisticated and haven't at one time joined a church and know the gospel, but have been somehow turned off. But we invite them to come to church with us Christmas. And other times too, but they will come Christmas.
We have been having class. We had a class last week on how to make lefse. When we get back, we're going to have a class on how to make glass etchings, so people can make them as Christmas gifts.
We know a couple of parishes in the Portland area that have, well, one specifically has an Advent celebration for the whole neighborhood, and they spend, what is it, John, $500?
$400 or $500
buy all the materials and invite all the neighborhood in and teach them crafts, whether it's candle making or lefse making or whatever it is, how to make Christmas presents. And that, it didn't start out to be an evangelism idea, but it has really blossomed. People in the community couldn't believe that the church was simply paying for all these materials and inviting them in for 4 weekends before Christmas and teaching them how to do these things. It was a very good witness to think that, no, we're just going to pay for the materials. You don't even have to put a dime in for a cup of coffee or whatever it is, too. So they've shared their skills and their gifts within the community through the church's idea like this. So.
Well, that reminds me kind of another thing we did in our congregation. We traditionally had a, or we regularly had a potluck dinner the first Sunday of every month with different types of programs, but always the first Sunday in December, we had just basic craft supplies out on the table, and I was just always amazed at the ideas that came up, and they went home with their door decoration and something to hang in their house, and all sorts of really nice Christian Christmas or Advent decorations that certainly not one of us would ever have thought of on our own. It was amazing. And they left a donation, I guess, but it always paid for itself. It wasn't expensive at all.
And what John mentioned earlier about we do need symbols in our lives, and it was a time also of educating of the symbols of Advent and trying to really emphasize that, which kind of diffused some of the push for simply Christmas decorations and really heightened the anticipation for people, I think. Learning some of the Advent hymns, and it was it really kind of snowballed as far as people's education and their excitement and awareness of others, etc. It's a good way to get people into that.
This doesn't have to do with parishes, but Marilyn had, we were talking the other day while we were stepping out, well, she had a really excellent idea for Advent.
Marilyn?
If you're not close to somebody in geography, that maybe you don't keep.
Wait for the tape.
Wait,
Marilyn,
to be on the
cake. Cake is done.
Pretty sure.
I don't care. Anyway, I haven't been able to spend last Christmas or this Christmas with my parents, and they understand that, but still, that's a very family time. So a way to help me prepare for Advent and help them prepare, and to just keep in close touch with each other at this time of year, I'm just sending them a card with a letter inside to be received on every of the 24 days before Christmas. And it's going to cost me postage, but we don't exchange gifts. So that's a gift of time. And
wait a minute, you're sending them a letter every day before Christmas. Is that what you said?
Right.
Every mail day?
No, I write two and mail them. And they can only open them on the date that's written on the back. So, and just with different Advent symbols and verses and poems and all sorts of things.
And they're all in calligraphy, too.
I bet. All done in calligraphy.
Oh, disgusting.
That's beautiful.
I think parishes, Christmas has become very popular. And I think that's very attractive. Some congregations have gone all out and really making gorgeous Christmas for their church trees. They're all.
Yeah. Do you all know what chrismons are?
No.
Would you explain what chrismons are?
Well, they're Christian symbols cut out of styrofoam and then hung on the tree, but they're very elaborately decorated with sequins and ball, you know, all kinds of that bobbly, bright things. But they're very
non-renewable resources. Yeah, we'll have to.
And if you work on it, it's a project that your congregation can do add year after year. Really, you know, because it takes an awful lot. If you have double trees, it takes a lot of Christmas.
There's a Welsh proverb that says, enough is a banquet. And I would like to use that as a reminder for you at Christmas time that whether it's your family or people that give gifts to you, just if you can keep that in mind, that to learn to know, to experience what gift is again, and get away from so much materialism and so many things that we no longer see that our basket is overflowing because we've come with such a large basket, that it's just never, never full, and therefore we're never satisfied. so to close, I just want to remind you again that Christmas is a time to honor the Lord of our life, to be peacemakers, to spread the idea that there is to be peace among men, that Jesus came to break down the walls of hostility, among other things, and that our Christmas celebration certainly should be in line with that. It gets more and more discouraging when you hear Muzak playing Christmas carols even before Reformation Day and Thanksgiving Santa Claus is out already. And
people who put their lights up so early.
Are the Christmas decorations in the stores and so on?
Mm-hmm. Even the houses, some of them are decorated.
Yeah.
Most of them came in the day after Halloween. All Saints Day.
The stores are full of paper and gifts and cards. And
well, living at Holden, we get kind of away from that. I mean, that's one of the nice things about being up here. We're just not contaminated like the rest of you are. We're not bombarded with all of that stuff. No. Werner and Judy's don't go on until Christmas.
I have some friends who every year they, in their family, they try to find, they get some kind of award or something to see who can find the most useless Christmas present that's being offered, you know, by the public. last year there was an electric tie rack, an electric tie rack where you'd pin your ties on it and then you'd push a button and it would turn. So you I thought that was a good idea.
Sure. I like the paper towel dispenser where you push a button and just one comes out, too. Very good. Anybody have anything else to say?
I'm wondering if anyone has any... I've been thinking a lot about different kinds of organizations or that I've been thinking about making a contribution to in honor of my parents or something like that. And I have a couple ideas, but not specifically something related to one community, but something that other people have given to that is a meaningful thing for them.
Marty, maybe somebody can answer specifically, but I just want to say that the Alternatives Celebrations Catalog, which is on order and should have been here, but it isn't in the bookstore, has all kinds of places where you can send money or you can buy gifts if you're going to buy them from self-help groups like in Appalachia or Indian reservations, new ideas to celebrate. Voluntary Simplicity Study Action Guide is a way to study biblically all of our holidays, not only religious holidays, but Independence Day and Halloween and St. Valentine's Day, and give you alternative ways to celebrate all of those different celebrations. Christmas Alternative Catalog was put out by a pastor and his education committee, adult education committee from Tucson, Arizona. He was here this summer, and I ordered some of these from him. What I like about this is that in the back of the book, they have many, many places to send for if you want to buy gifts that are handmade from groups that really need the business, like Koinonia Farms, if you're familiar with Jubilee Partners down in Americus, Georgia. They have pecans and all kinds of things that this is how they support their work that Clarence Jordan started down at Koinonia. So if you're going to buy gifts instead of buying from Dan and Ray or whatever that cheese group is that sends out those cheeses and fruits all over the country, you might want to consider something like Koinonia Farms sending nuts or fruitcakes or all of these different groups listed in the Alternative Celebration Catalog. But does anyone have a specific for Marty that...
Well, it's not very hard. Like my mailman, my box is full of pleas from just about everybody you can think of. And you just simply have to
pick and choose.
Pick and choose.
I guess it depends upon the recipient of the gift. I think some people want a known charitable, like Lutheran World Relief, where they know that there's a low administrative cost. Some of the things that you get, the administrative costs and the salaries of the people in the ads in Time magazine are 60% or 70% of all the gifts they get. Lutheran World Relief is 7%. I think it's the lowest of any church. World Service about the same. That's one factor. I think sometimes if you know, Mary and I had two friends in D.C. who picked a particular thing, and it was Alderson Prison in Alderson, West Virginia, which is the only federal penitentiary owned exclusively for women. And it had no way in which low-income families could visit those women. There was no hotel, motel, Greyhound bus. Amtrak did not stop there. And unless you had a car and had time off to drive, a lot of the women are from D.C. or the East Coast, minorities and poor, you couldn't get to see someone in that prison. So they ventured forth and got an old dormitory of an abandoned school that had once been there, made it a hospitality house. Other friends in D.C. took a van from D.C. and Baltimore. You stayed free at that house, contribution if you could afford it, so hundreds of people get to visit a prisoner because of that house. We also joined others and wrote to Amtrak for over a year, and it does stop if it's flagged in either direction, so you can now get there with public transportation. We know them personally, and their total budget for that is $14,000 a year, and three people have their salary coming out of that too. I mean, I don't know any more efficient dollars in the world as far as service to people. If the people you know understand that the gift is that specific, that also has a kind of advantage as over against Lutheran World Relief. And I don't know how you decide, but either you know the integrity of the group, or it's a very personal involvement and you know that that gift, you almost know where each dollar goes because of a personal involvement. One or the other of those have usually been my choice.
John, can't you designate gifts so with Lutheran World Relief and Lutheran World Ministries? What I have in mind is a congregation in Olympia that I'm familiar with, where the pastors were finding it a little bit difficult for people to identify just with Lutheran World Relief. And I know that congregation is giving to a tree planting project in Kenya.
Yeah.
And they made it really a neat project. And in their parish, all the children made trees, and they're hanging from the ceiling, and they have some banners in their church, and it's really become a real theme for them this last year or two. So can't you designate in some ways if you know projects?
And the Namibian Fund, they need $5,000 more to buy a van for the women to tour around in Namibia for their church work there. That's another place that really needs funds desperately.
I think most of those groups will send your dollars where you say. I'm not taking away from that at all. I think most of the time, if there's a total budget, your dollars do go there, and if you put the whole thing in a year, it just means somebody else's dollars don't go there. I wonder if it isn't more for our sake and the kids having a tree on the ceiling than it is actually going there. That's not taking anything away from it. But I think you also can designate a project that they weren't going to fund, that you want funded, and they have to send the dollars there too. I mean, if it's a group with any integrity, I think they'll go there. We once sent to the American Lutheran Church a designated fund that we wanted and that they didn't want, and they kept returning the check. So at least they didn't use it where we didn't want it. That went on for months.
Well, thank you all very much, and Merry Christmas.